Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for preparing yourselves to spend an hour with us. And I hope you find it an hour well spent. The objective we've got is to try and give you a sense of the excitement that surrounds this project that we're leading now. Basically to introduce a mid-course correction to the web, which is a bit of a lofty goal, but when Tim Berners-Lee and I started the company about 18 months ago, it was the culmination of about 20 years of work that Tim's been doing while he was at MIT. And a lot of really, really hard work and smart people have been involved up to this point. And I think if we can't achieve anything through the course of the next hour, we can at least give you a sense of why the web is absolutely about to change, and why we think the way that Tim envisions it is absolutely the way it will go, then it's an hour spent for all of us. So what we hope to do is to spend about 40 minutes talking to you, and then leave some time again for questions. By way of introduction, my name's John Bruce. I'm the CEO of an entity called InMount. It's a business called InMount. And Tim and I started it together, as I say, about 18 months ago. And it's intended to galvanize an open source project that as I mentioned earlier, has been underway for quite some time at MIT, the culmination of which is a platform technology called Solid. And InMount is a commercialization of Solid, intended to bring resources to bear to galvanize the project. And I'll talk more at the end of this about how it's working. But anyway, so that's me. I'm John Bruce. I'm the CEO of InMount.
Hey everybody, I'm Justin Bingham. I'm the CTO of Genero Digital. I did not invent the web, but I use it a lot. We've partnered with Tim and InRupt, and we're really helping to bring this technology to the masses, both individuals and also enterprises, governments, and everything in between. I'm also a core team member of the Solid Open Source team. So we're excited, as John mentioned, to tell you about this decentralization effort, but also, and we'll spend a lot of time on this, since we're talking about designing for the next 30 years of the web, what you're going to be able to make in this new world. So I think that's what a lot of you guys are here for, so we're excited to get in and talk to you about that. Yeah. Take it away.
So the web that was originally in Tim's mind when he invented it isn't the web we've got today. I think, you know, and I speak somewhat for him, but you'll see his public description of all of this, that the web as it's evolved has really taken a massive detour. And I think while there's been a tremendous amount of value, of course there has been, developed as a consequence of the web, some of the things that now face us as challenges are fairly significant. And you all live in it, as we all are, so you know what they are. You know, we've had countless examples now in the press of invasions of privacy and control in the hands of a few that are huge and monopolistic. And while the regulators will kick in and there'll be a voice of reason that will come forward to try and see how we can affect a change to these monolithic entities or to these huge entities, I think that what we believe is that technology gave us the challenge and technology gives us a solution too. And so what we were about to try to do is to introduce a mid-course correction to the web. You know, next week is the 30th anniversary of its invention, so you'll see a lot of press around, you know, the celebration of the goodness that's evolved and some of the stuff that's not so good. But it's critical we change it. It really is. And if we can introduce the mid-course correction now, then 30 years hence, we'll be in a totally different place than we're currently projected to be in. So while I'm here to talk about the regulators and their impact on this, all the voices of reason that the politicians will come forward with and so on, some of it was here over the last couple of days, we believe that the mission we're on to deliver technology that can push us back to where we were originally intended to be. That's our mission. So the way we look at it, the web's composed of three big constituencies. This is a little bit oversimplistic, but I think it really does the job. I mean, there's three huge constituencies on the web. There are users, like we all are. We want to use the web to our advantage. We want to collaborate, we want to share, we want to get educated, we want to create value. Some of us want to run businesses. And we're all constrained. You know, if like me, you've got a phone with 80 different applications on, every single one of them limiting in a sense of it performs one function for me. And the trade is I give the vendor my data in return for this service. And if I want to switch services, it's really tough. And actually, what am I doing? Generally, I'm switching from an application that performs one service to an alternative solution that does pretty much the self-same thing. I mean, it really is a constrained world. And then organizations, for a lot of my most recent years, I actually am a certified privacy professional, amongst other things, and one of the most recent years I've been traveling around, particularly in Europe, talking to major organizations, in that particular case about GDPR, I mean, the obligations on big businesses and so on, or any business, when you take your customer or employee data and now the obligations you have to treat you appropriately. And almost without exception, what I found was the overwhelming majority of organizations don't want the data. If they could live in a world where they could deliver their service or their product to their customers without the requirement to take all the data, keep it safe and secure and so on, then they'd gladly do it. But they would turn to me and say, yeah, but John, it doesn't work that way, right? That's not the way the web works. Of course, the positive is that it could. And then the third big constituency, the area that makes the web really function, is the developers, the application developers, the glue that bind it all together. And of course, if you're a developer, I presume a good number of you are, then you know the world we're in. We're constrained by the obligation to extract data from our customers, render value back. Now we've got to provision the data appropriately. And when you want to traverse one set of data to another, we're bound by the obligations and limitations of APIs. It's an absolute nightmare. Actually, what's most exciting, oh no, not most, one of the most exciting things about the experience we've had since we told the public at large that what we intended to do with Interrupt was to see if we could change the web. The developers we've been working with, and there have been tens of thousands come along actually, but the ones most intimately involved, like Justin and his team, they go through this really interesting change. For about a week and a half of using Solid, you can see they're confused and they find it frustrating. They can't quite get a hang of how does this thing work. And Justin's going to explain to you a bit more about that in a bit. And then one day they come to a stand-up, which is the way developers generally collaborate. We want to stand up each day and one day they turn up and they can't wait to tell you the experience they just had. Well, they should have come across this threshold from being bound by the constraints of web design and development as we all grapple with it today, into this new world, this new landscape of Solid and what it can do, and they have an epiphany. Now they can see what it truly can do, and off they go. So these three constituencies, users, organizations, and developers, all frustrated, I think. All have an appetite for change. And it's happening. We've already started to see it. It's all going to be about data. I know this is somewhat obvious that there's a challenge. with data today. How do you keep it safe, secure, and so on and so forth? But more importantly for me is the promise of data that isn't being realized today. And that is what's most frustrating about the web today. Not that, you know, you have to keep your data private, and occasionally you will suffer intrusion, and there's all the regulators kicking about breaches and all that sort of stuff. Of course it's relevant, but more importantly, it's not working for us. It's working for the vendors, for the providers. And that's the inverse of what was originally intended. We're going to use an expression through the course of the presentation here, which is the decentralized web. And it's a term that's very often bandied about. And I think a lot of the blockchain projects, though we've been involved in blockchain, and so a lot of the blockchain projects sort of kind of reference it. Somebody told me there was a program on TV called a series, and Silicon Valley, and it was all about the decentralization of the web. So clearly it's made its way into the populace. But I think that what really is important is we just spend a couple of minutes on what decentralized web means to us. In our way of looking at it, and this is oversimplification, so apologies for that in advance, but you know, there's a notion where users exist outside the silos of their data. And I pick on the obvious examples here, but there are many more, of course, where we give our data to the vendor in return for which we get a service. That is a centralized system, of course. We end up with huge silos of data. In the world of decentralization, and particularly this graphic represents the world of Solid, and just to repeat it, Solid was originally started as an open source project out of MIT, so it's completely open source. Anybody can use it, anybody can develop with it. All that Inrunt intends to do is commercialize it and help galvanize the overall open source project. But the way Solid works, so see these hexagons there? That's a thing called a personal online data store. It means that your data won't leave you and go off to the vendors. Your data stays under your control. And we imagine in the world as it evolves, these will be hosted for you by providers, pod providers. And in your pod will be not just your data, but data from IoT devices relevant to you. I will tell you this, Tim, as one example, has been running his life this way for a number of years. In his pod, he has all his own data. He has data of friends and family and colleagues, like me. And he also has data from devices around his house.
He's been doing his taxes on it.
Huh?
He's been doing his taxes on it.
Yeah. So your pod will be the repository of your data, not just the data that you generate, but data from devices pertinent to you. And the way applications work with Solid is just like your browser does, where access under permissions from your data, friends and family, as I said, IoT devices, are rendered to you. The data is not taken away, so to do. It's all rendered local to you. So, it's an important notion that decentralization for Solid equals everybody has a pod. Actually, you might have more than one pod. You might have a professional pod. You can imagine you might have a personal pod. You might well find, and we're already working with some very significant organizations who want to give pods to employees so the employees can get more collaborative inside the workplace. They can use applications that escape them today, elude them today. And it all resides in an organization provision pod with organization provision applications. So Justin's going to tell you a little bit, give you some examples of the things that you make.
Thank you. Hello. This is why everybody, I think, is really here. What are you going to be able to make that's new or different? When we talk about the next 30 years, we're not talking about what new kind of visual patterns or design styles are we going to use 20 years from now. It's how is what you're designing on top of fundamentally changing that allows you to fundamentally change the stuff that you're designing and the stuff that you're making. So that's what I'm going to do my best to give you some ideas about it. And what's important is that you come away being able to start to brainstorm about these things that you could make. So I'm going to give a quick recap on just the basics so that you understand what that is, and then I'm going to give you some examples. So as John mentioned, Solid, created by the inventor of the web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, made the first web server, the first web browser, HTTP, all of these things that actually power just about everything that you use today, whether you're on mobile, whether you're in your browser, etc. But Solid, like the web, is a set of open standards and protocols. It's on top of the web, and its aim is to decentralize the web. And in the simplest sense, it allows individual entities, which could be me, it could be you, it could be this room, any entity that could have information associated with it, and allows it to separate that data from the applications and systems that leverage it into pods, which John just told you about. And it gives you this common backend for decentralized applications. But it's not a blockchain either. So usually that's the first question I get, is Solid a blockchain? And I say no. And they say, but have you seen Silicon Valley the most recent season? And I say yes. But ultimately with Solid, you get to control your data, your information that's in your pod. You get to decide what people or what applications are going to be able to access this. So if you think about the difference in the way it works today, you sign up for applications and they have their data kind of in their silo. And you put all your data in there, but it's kind of now outside of your control. You don't get to pick and choose then how that gets used or how that gets accessed. And that's really, really important. In Solid, it's also not all or nothing. You can decide which data you're going to expose. So it's not just, yes, you can have access to all my stuff. It's, I want to only let you have access to this little bit of stuff. But this is not enough. Privacy and security is not enough to get people to say, yes, let's change the entire way that we're doing things. Just by a show of hands, over the last couple of years, John referenced this a little bit, but there's been I think the idea of where your data is and who has your data has kind of come to the forefront of the mainstream. How many people, you know, felt like, or how many people are aware of, you know, the issues that happened around the election in the States a couple of years ago? Just by a show of hands. Okay. It's a lot of people, yeah. So how many kind of felt uneasy or felt like maybe your information was leveraged in a way that you didn't like? How many of you guys deleted the accounts that you had on your services? A little bit, it's a lot less. Yeah. Privacy and security isn't enough to get people to actually change. You also have to give them something better. You have to be able to let them do stuff that they couldn't do before. To say, yeah, I actually want to go use that. Because while it may be enough for a small amount of us, it's not enough to create a tidal wave of change. And this is where I get excited about Solid. You know, people think about centralized data as just a privacy and security thing, but the real bottom line is that it's just hard to use. On my flight out here, I updated this graphic, and I just wanted to kind of look at what are the services that are centralized that I have used literally in my trip out to Austin, Texas. And, you know, these are just one of them. This is all of my data. This is all of my stuff. It's not in one big centralized place when you talk about centralization. It's in all of these different silos. And so it's all of mine, but it's really, really hard for me to use all of it. And that's one of the biggest limiting things that we have today in trying to make something new. because we keep running into these boundaries. Where John mentioned the issues with API and integration, and you know, this is it right here. Every single one has a wall. If you want to be able to use all of your data, for example, I have this speaking event on my calendar in Exchange, and then you know, hopefully, I'm sure I'll end up being LinkedIn contacts with some of you guys, and please feel free to connect with me. If I were to go bring up that event in Exchange, I'm not going to see you made contact with these people at this event, because there would have to be work done to make that stuff integrate. And then if I wanted to say, when I look at that event, where did I spend money on tickets and restaurants and bars, so I can make a quick expense report, that stuff is just not connected because it lives in these different silos, but it's all my data. So I could do really intuitive things with my data if I could use all of it, but I can't because the world works like this. But in solid, it's a bit different. So what really makes solid unique, after beyond just the fact that you can kind of have the privacy and security aspect, is that you can give an application access to the full spectrum of your information. And not just that they can get to it, but in solid, it uses, I'm gonna try not to get into the technical weeds, but it uses a graph kind of a data model, where you're not just sticking things in it, but you're also mapping how they're related. So that example that I just gave, where I said, you know, I was at this event and I met some of you people and we're connected, that's all recorded in this graph. And that allows you to make really intuitive new kinds of applications. You can make an application that works across those silos I just showed you. But beyond that, you actually can make applications that can understand these relationships natively. So you can do better things. Do you guys know what the hardest part is in machine learning? Trying to make something that's AI-enabled or machine learning? After math, we can all agree math is hard for a lot of us. But once you get past math, you know what the hardest part is? It's preparing the information. It's actually organizing the data so that the machine can just process it and understand it. And why is that hard? I think, well, because what machine learning is trying to do is take a bunch of complex stuff and then be able to find patterns so that it can make intuitions based on that. And the world is complicated. But when you have data stored in a graph and you have context of how that data is related, you also can make really smart applications and smart things, which is also part of this next wave. But the other key part, because Solid is an open standard, not just how you talk to Solid at a network level, but the data model it's designed for interoperability. You don't have to make or do work to make applications be able to talk to each other because they interoperate through the pod. Because we describe data and relationships between data in a way that everybody can agree on using vocabularies and data shapes. And that may sound really foreign to everybody or like no one's ever going to do that. 40% of the web is already using this kind of a data model. Search engines use it every day. If you go and search for restaurants or movies, and the search engine kind of looks and says, oh, these are the movie times, it's because it's using the underlying data model, link data, that Solid uses to be able to understand the context of the information page. So two applications that have no knowledge of each other can rewrite the same kind of data in your pod safely, which means you don't have the interoperability problem with siloed data. It allows you to do amazing things, both as an individual developer or as an enterprise. It sounds like magic, and it feels like magic, but it's not. It just works, because we're solving interoperability at a different level. And your data becomes part of the web of data. All based on open standards, but you get to decide who can access that information. and you can retract that access. Your data never leaves your cloud. It creates this big global graph where all relevant information is connected across hops. So it's not just that you can connect data that's in yours, but you can connect to others as well. And this is Tim's original vision for the web. He never, you know, literally from day one, when he wrote the first paper, it wasn't that you can have pages that link to each other. And there's this quote that he said way back, which you hear about a lot today because it's the 30th anniversary, where he said, you know, with the web, you can link anything to anything. And the idea of just 30 years ago that you can have documents and they can relate and you can access them across the world, it was revolutionary. So he just wrote it as one word, anything to anything. But what he meant was this, that you can link anything to any other thing. More than just documents, but data as well, a web of data. And we're realizing that now. And so while with decentralization, I think privacy is the hook. That's the thing that gets people paying attention to it. But the really exciting part, the part that's going to change what you can design for the next 30 years, is this interoperability, this web of data that the web is moving over to, that, you know, John, myself, the rest of the members of our team, Tim, we're working on this every single day. We're able to make this new breed of applications. So I know everybody, you know, kind of came here to want to see it and feel something. So now we're going to show you some stuff. And what we wanted to do more than anything was to get you to understand this interoperability, this ability to have applications that just kind of work across silos. And we wanted to pick one of the simplest workflows that as many people in the audience do every day, and show how we can make that a bit better, a lot better, and one that you're familiar with. So that's what we're going to run through now. So just at a bird's eye view, really fast, just to think about your pod as a place where you have a bunch of information, just like your Finder, Explorer type view, but instead of, you know, your main kind of window into it being files, these are things. These are pieces of data that are interrelated. And you can see things that are on your pod, but also on other pods that have been shared with you because it's a graph. So I randomly chose a person to demonstrate. So let's talk about a workflow. So John's going to have a meeting with Samantha. And ahead of the meeting, Samantha says, realizes that she's got some stuff that she wants to send to John. How many, you know, everybody does this. So you end up trying to email it, and then you realize, this is too big for email, so I'm going to go put it in Dropbox, and I have to send that link. Well, what Samantha does instead is she goes to John's homepage, his pod URL. This is all on the web. But instead of the homepage is back in the 90s, because yes, we're bringing them back, where it'd be like a windsurfing video and some links, instead, because the pod has all of your information, all of your data, it's like the API to you. It's the API to all your stuff. And if you go to it in a web browser, you can interface with that. Just the other day, I was talking to Tim about this. He was like, yeah, you know, the homepages back then, it was just document with some stuff. But now, when you go to it, it's data-driven. It's data-enabled, and you can interact with it. So Sam goes to John's pod, and you can see it's kind of tiny up there, but Solid uses a decentralized identity and authentication scheme. So when you go to John's homepage, when Sam goes there, it actually recognizes who she is. And it knows that Sam has got some access to be able to share some stuff with John. She said, you know, I'm going to drop some files to John ahead of this meeting. And because in Solid, applications have access to the full spectrum of data, it knows that they've got a meeting there. So it says, you know, are these related to this meeting that you have coming up? It's just basic, simple logic with the graph. And she says, yeah, actually they are related. So John's on his way to the meeting in a totally different application. His speechulator application says that in a push notification, Sam shared a few items ahead of the meeting. He says, okay, that's cool. So he brings that up, and he brings up the event, and he now sees that these items are associated with it. And he sees the people associated with the meeting as well. So that's handy. That was nice. So now the meeting starts. And as somebody who takes notes on everything, if I was in the audience right now, I'd have a notes app up and I'd be writing pretty much everything word for word because I'm compulsive like that. John brings his notes app up as the meeting starts. But this is solid enable, which allows you to do some smart things. So when he brings the notes app up, again, it has access to his data and identifies that you actually may be in this meeting right now. So if you're thinking about just in the way that the world works today, you'd be opening up Evernote, and Evernote would somehow need to be able to integrate with your Microsoft Exchange,
yeah, sure,
calendar, and all of this. But since this is going through the pod, it just works. So are you in this meeting? Do you want to link this note to this meeting so that you have it connected? If you bring the meeting up later, you'll see it? Yeah. It also identified people that were associated with this in the graph and says, I noticed one of these isn't one of your contacts right now. Do you want to add this to your contacts? Great. So the meeting's going, and they're talking about a partnership, and they're going to do all kinds of really cool things together. And as they're talking, I want you to picture the Facebook kind of object referencing kind of model where you start typing somebody's name and it auto-completes for you. Well, in Solid, when you're working with a graph, you can do that with everything. So as you start typing, they have some action items that they want to follow on. So they start typing a task, and that records the task in the graph. And in this case, John says, you know, I'm bringing that market investment to get a prototype architected in design. So I'm just milling about, not doing anything in particular, and I get a notification that I've got to connect with Mark because John had this task that he created in a note. So I bring up my task now, and just automatically, without any kind of integration,
oh,
I see
volume was
the
zero.
Meeting that was associated
was like
with
zero.
This
zero
task,
zero?
The
yeah.
Note
I mean,
associated
it's
with
like
this task.
Default,
I get
default
it,
level,
access
no,
to be able to kind of know about it, because when John made that association, he allowed me to get, you know, limited access to this, and I see the people that are connected. So I decide, you know what, I'm going to make a project out of this. I make a project, and it pulls all of this data together. It has a kind of history that, you know, of the things that are associated with this project and the collaborators. It just auto-populates.
Okay.
Meanwhile, John is still in the meeting and gets those notifications that I added him to a new project that I created
more
about this that he literally just finished typing.
That's weird. Okay.
And he brings that up and he sees all of this stuff brought together around the project and decides he's going to spin up a chat and connect some people around. And because all of this stuff is interrelated and linked, the entire history of all of these things that happened and connected are all here together. Now John leaves the meeting, and he gets this notification from the health app that he's reaching his set goal for the month. And so he brings up his health app, and it has access to more than just his activity. It's got access to things like his next event, and it knows that if he walks to this next meeting, he'll actually reach his step goal. So he decides he's going to do that. And his insurance provider is Solid Enable. So his insurance provider has this special promotion, and he's giving his insurance provider access to his kind of physical activity data. And says, congratulations on reaching your step goal for the past 3 months. You're actually qualified for a new premium. So what did you just see? It's not that any of this stuff, any of these applications don't exist, but it's that all of this data typically is completely siloed. That was 7 different applications working together, and no integration work had to be done for those applications to be able to interoperate in this workflow. They were unencumbered by centralization, and the data that it worked with never actually left the pod. Different applications were reading and writing the same type of information. And we like to say that Solid enables this permissionless innovation. But right now, if you want to make an application that uses data in a silo, whether it be from LinkedIn or Facebook, and I don't like to pick on those guys, it's just people are familiar with them. You need their permission to talk to that API to get that data, even though it may be yours. In Solid, any of you could write an application that participates in this workflow or replaces one of those applications I just showed in that workflow, and it will just work. You didn't need to coordinate with me or anybody else to do it because it interoperates through the data in your pod and other people's pods.
So I will add that the majority of what Justin just showed you works today. So I mentioned to you earlier, Tim's been running the live on Solid for a number of years. And the majority of what you've seen here, that's how Tim operates. What we're doing is we're adding a layer of UI to it to make it more universally friendly. I mean, if you're Tim, you can hack it, and he knows exactly how to do that. But for everybody else, we all need a way to interact with Solid, which is much more friendly, much more user-centric. So that's some of the work we're undertaking. So let's just switch gears a bit, and then we've got plenty of time to answer questions. The other thing I wanted to give you some insight into is, and I'll come back to it at the end, is just what's happened in the last, I guess it's coming up to 6 months now, since we went live with this. So remember those three constituencies: users, organizations, and developers. So let's start with users. I mean, clearly, in a world where you're in control of your data, local to you, local virtually, that is to say, it's not a managed or necessarily have a server in the basement, you keep it all online. But under your purview, under your control, all your data, then, the tech companies, no longer stewards of it. That gets us out of a huge amount of the constraints we've got today with applications that can be intrusive, applications that can have liberties, take liberties with your data. But more importantly, the person that's most valuable to your data is you. Your data is worth way more to you than it is to anybody else. It's just that the way the web works today doesn't release that, and we believe that Solid does. And oftentimes, when I'm particularly to journalists will say to me, well, can you give me an example of the applications that we can invent? And I'll say, I'm not an inventive type. I'm hopeful, and we've seen about 25 applications now in the open source effort over the last 5 months. People are able to invent hugely creative apps. And again, not constrained by all the usual stuff we face with API access to data and so on. What's most challenging is foreseeing where it's all going to go. We begin to see it. We begin to see the wheels of change. We begin to see the creativity that the developers are coming forward with. And organizations love it. We're in now advanced and very serious discussions with some huge organizations who want to deploy this for their constituents. There's a telecoms carrier, 300 million users, government agency overseas, 60 million users, financial company built up in the northeast here, in the US, tens of millions of users. And because they like the idea where they get out from under the obligations they've got, if they can go back to core competencies, then that's it. Well, The overwhelming majority of organizations we're talking to don't want the data. It's toxic. It's past the point where it's considered to be of value. Sure, it's got a measure of value, but nothing by comparison to the obligations they face when they take it. And what's very exciting is to see the new business ideas that folks are coming forward with. Ways to provision the kind of services they get used to, but in a way that's consistent with this. Actually, and you know, when we talk about the big silos, Facebook is the one everybody picks on. Well, there's two good examples we're aware of folks building a solid version of Facebook. A way where you can basically get pretty much all the things that Facebook delivers you. Social interaction, collaboration, ability to share, and so on, but do it in a solid way. And then the developers are where I'm most excited, because that's where we're at today, actually. We don't have technology that we're able to deliver to the end users generally. It's still very much the case that the developers are the ones we want to help, because they're the folks who are going to unlock all the promise of this. And the fact that it's still called web standards means that there's nothing new and novel going on here. Somebody said to us, you know, you're trying to turn the web upside down. And we're not, we're just trying to turn it right side up. It's solid, it's all based on web standards, so that means, and this is going to get celebrated next week, along with the 30th anniversary, there's a celebration of the fact that half the world's population now is on the web. And that means if you're a developer, you've got potentially 500,000 users to whatever it is you invent. And the fact that you're not constrained by APIs gives you a very interesting palette to paint with, particularly for anybody who's in the inference and AI business. That's really exciting times. And I used the last bullet as a faster way to go, but in 5 months, coming up 6 months since we started to talk to people about this, it's been astonishing, actually. You know, we put a little modest website out, well, two of them, and they've had just under 2 million visitors now. We've had tens of thousands, I think the last count was over 70,000 folks have signed up for pods. We've got thousands of developers in GitHub, and if you're familiar with GitHub, you'll know what that is. We used to get about 5 posts a week in GitHub. And we get about 500 a day now, and it's going up. We're aware of about 25 applications. We're hosting a solid startup workshop next week, or a week after next, excuse me. I think at last count there were 9 organizations flying in to attend that. These are startups. These are people who are going to build businesses on the technology. And you know, some of the big names on the slide earlier that often get disparaged for the kind of attitude they've got to data. One example is Google. We're working with Google. There's a project underway in Google called DTP, and we're excited to be working with them on that. An ability to take your data out of Google and put it in solid files. We're working with Akamai, a good number of you know who they are. Strategically, a really, really great partner for us. They want to help this get evolved. And countless examples of big organizations who mobilize at a speed I've never seen before. I'm a serial entrepreneur, this is, I think, my 5th company, and I've never seen anything like this in terms of, there's clearly an appetite, there's a real desire for change by all the principal constituencies, and to see how quickly they're mobilizing to this is hugely gratifying, and I think it bodes well for everybody who wants to participate. So there are ways to get involved. There's some property websites you can go to. I guess the place to go initially is solidedata.com. Great plot. But you're a developer, actually. I think if you're like me, you're a general end user. Not yet. A few more months to go. By the end of this year, we'll be encouraging you to come and experience Solid. But for now, if you're a developer, solidedata.com, GitHub, you'll find it's a very growing community and it's growing. And then there's a discussion forum around the project too.
think it's questions. But we think the world's good. The world.
This is how Tim envisioned it. This is what we'll put in the web children. Billions of pods, billions of users and their pods, all interconnected, all collaborating in a way that's not the web of today. And, a pet quote for the team, Tim included, is we're not trying to foresee the future, we're trying to help everybody else enable it. That's the mission we're on. And we have time for questions, if anybody has any. I don't know how best to do this, but... there's a mic in the middle, okay.
Got it. All right, so you've got this vastly connected graph of permissionable nodes. How does an end user keep from getting overwhelmed with the task of granting permissions to the hundreds of applications that might want to access their cloud?
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good question, because I think that one of the biggest shortcomings, even forget about decentralization, but even when you start to look at things like Google Drive or Dropbox, there's a lot of work to be done that needs to get done to kind of manage all of that permissioning. And so people end up, because it's inconvenient, they kind of say, you know what, just take access to everything.
This is the Android application install experience.
Yeah.
Yes,
you can have my children kill my kittens, whatever, let me play the duel.
Right, exactly. And so while I would be quick to say, well, you can have very fine-grained access to everything in the pod, that's not the answer to your question. And so actually the way that we manage that is through the data model, and we try to give people a way to organize their things into collections that make sense to them, and then be able to have that experience. If there's a bunch of research around when someone goes to give access to something and says, do you want to give this thing access to this, that it's not that this isn't everything, but it is a collection of kind of the right scope of stuff. You're not giving away too much, but it's also not such a small amount that you spend all your time managing permissions. So it's solved in two places. In the data model that organizes nodes in the graph into collections, but then also in the user experience that makes that intuitive for people. Now, your next question may be, but you're saying that anybody can make applications, so how do you make sure somebody doesn't make a crap user experience that makes that hard for people? A lot of the work that we're doing is creating SDKs and toolkits that give people common componentry, like managing access and authorization, that they can pull into the applications that they make, so that we try to make sure that some of those core parts that need to be intuitive stay intuitive.
Right, so you're having to enforce a taxonomy of common permission groupings.
Yeah. That's a great question. I appreciate it.
So I have a question about the pod. So initially, you know, I signed up for one, and it assumed it was just some virtual machine on one of your servers somewhere. But it might also play a understanding that anyone can build their own pods, connect to the internet, access it anywhere. But they're going to be a standard for it. Anyone can build them, sell them, market them. It would be its own little world, right? And I thought,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The like the web, just like the web, right? The standard to make a pod server, a solid server, it's completely open and free. You could go home and code one yourself. And it's all on top of, if you want. I'm not saying go do that. But you can also the servers to run it. There are several open source implementations. You can go and stand one up and host it from your house if you want. Or you could go with a provider. John mentioned there's a open source community provider, solid.community, interrupt has one, interrupt.net. And there's ones popping up all over the place that we just find out about. Like, because people come and say, hey, I have one too. There were a couple, you know, in Europe, one in China that, you know, we found out about a few days ago. So
the the pods that are basically up in the cloud that people can sign up or rent or however it is they're going to be financed. Is there any oversight of that, or what's to keep anyone from operating ones that aren't really good?
Yeah, great question. That is an appropriate headline there. Just to back up a second, we think the way the world of pod providers will go, and we're beginning to see the evidence of this, is that you will have a relationship with a pod provider that might be free to one extent, and then you go beyond that, and then there's a subscription to be paid. That's a classic model. We also see examples, and I mentioned finance, where in the first instance we see that use case, they're going to provision a pod to you with your financial data in it. And that pod can be accessed by other applications. They're going to brand it, and your relationship with the financial provider gets you initial access to that. As you put more stuff in it, they're going to start charging a subscription fee. And we imagine that you will pay more to a financial company to look after your highly sensitive data in a way that you'll be more relaxed with, you know, friends and family pictures and so on. So it's an ecosystem, and you'll decide where in all of that you want to be, just as you do today. I mean, I like to think of like the lockbox at the bank. You know, they look after it for you, they keep it all in the valuable, safe and secure, but they can't get in it. And I pay for the privilege of that. So,
is there can you have multiple pods for one account?
Yes.
Yeah. And how? Okay, I imagine I'll wait for someone's name.
Right. So this is kind of the beauty of the data model being a graph, right? So you as an entity kind of have a global identifier that says this is you. You can store different kinds of data in different pods all over the world. So for example, if you look at health data, you're going to want to make sure that where your health data is, if you're not hosting it yourself in your own pod server, that the people who are hosting that really know what they're doing and have a bunch of security protocols and all of that. And could be your insurance company or your healthcare provider, or it could just be by a special company. And you may be, your insurance company may pay that for you, or you may pay for that extra level of security, but you don't need that extra level of security for your shopping list. So you may have four or five different actual pods, but to you, it's seamless and it looks like one virtual pod. And it's all kind of interconnected, and you manage access to it like you're managing access to your different things in your one pod, even though it's spread out.
Sounds great. Can't wait to see it.
It's a great question.
So I'm kind of learning my way through the development side of things and how they work. But my main, I guess, line of business is marketing. So I'm the type of person, might be seen as a villain here, but I'm the guy that needs that data that right now is being shared, here and there. And in the past, when I've worked with smaller markets, I guess it's kind of where our indexes and our pools are much smaller, and so we try to make decisions for sales and our clients. It sounds like that's the trend that we might make because people kind of have a bad taste in their mouth right now about sharing information, and I would predict the default is going to be, no, I'm going to forward all my information, and it's not going to be as accessible to people who are trying to share content. Because right now, that's kind of our viewership, is content gets fed to us, and we discover things that way.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if this is going to funnel any differently.
So two things. I mean, there's a whole new economy that can exist here, right? So you're not going direct to me for my marketing data right now, right? You're going through a service, and great for that service. I think that service can continue to exist in this model as kind of a broker to me. But the difference is now I can actually get value for allowing certain slices of my data to be used for that. So I'm actually more incented, it can be more incented, to give you access to a few extra dimensions of it because you're giving me something in return. And that, it's part of being in control of your data. It's not just about so I can wall things out, but it just means that when I give access to it, there's an equitable exchange. And so there's actually new possibilities in your world. It's not necessarily doom and gloom, because it's in my ability to give you access to a little bit more than just, you know, my click through, but also, well, what did I get? And then, you know, how have I been using that? You know, there's more that could be valuable to you, and you can make it worth my while.
Awesome, thanks.
Hey guys.
So a quick question more around how the business is gonna, the business strategy, right? So you said that you're talking to specific companies, very large enterprises. Do you see them generating the demand for the user pods, or do you foresee this being a bottleneck, right? What comes
first? That's a great question. So you know, I think that this is all about the network effect. You know, there's the usual tension between end users being available for application developers and applications being available for end users to want to become an end user. So and that whole network effect is organically moving now. I mean, we've seen people mobilize. We've seen a lot of people sign up for pods as end users. We've seen a lot of developers come forward and begin to create apps. But what we're looking to do as InRunner is accelerate that. And the way we're going after that is to try to partner with folks who've got very significant web footprint, and the use case describes multiple use cases and what they're describing. We're going to give these to our constituents. And initially, it's for healthcare, finance, folks who want to be involved in drug trials, and so on. And once the pod's in place, then the user, the end user is available. So developers in turn can say, okay, well, I know where there might well be 60 million pod owners in a particular geography. It's worth my while attending to that. So I think organically we're experiencing already an evolution, a change, you know, beginning to mobilize, where we're looking to invest time and energy to accelerate by these folks with big footprints. And it is absolutely the case, and the reason it's gone so quickly, candidly, because usually it doesn't go this way, is because these are projects that were already described in the minds of the vendors, but they lack the technology. They look at it with blockchain, some of them, and they go, oh, we can get this done with blockchain, and ran into obvious problems with some of these users, and they were doing that. And then they were casting around, and they were going, okay, well, how do we do it then? Answer, stop. And that's why we've experienced so much of things so quickly. I mean, in terms of interest, serious interest. So answer to your question, network effect will naturally and organically continue, but we're looking to inject some fairly significant footprints in there. We're also developing apps. So Justin and his team are building applications as examples to the developers as well. So
I like this frame, because I think one of the concerns is the walled gardens own a lot of the data, so you need to reach out to some of those corporations that also have their own data.
Absolutely right. So that's why we took out of MIT. We built a company to do this, because now I can commission resources to go and engage those potential users, and Justin and his team can bring technical support to it and so on, so that we can accelerate the network effect.
And also, you know, solving, you know, these kind of big scale opportunities are really, really good for creating and establishing a lot of componentry to solve those big scale opportunities. And we're injecting a lot of that, like, right back into the open source community. We're probably the biggest contributor back into the open source community, the standards, we're evolving that stuff. So we're immediately taking all the stuff that we're learning, all the stuff that we're doing, and putting it right back into the ecosystem. And these kind of big footprints help us be able to set up stuff so that you can make something that can scale to 100 million people, you know, not just a big company can.
Awesome. Thank you. Are there any technical limitations to certain services that are on the web now that you cannot do with the pods? For example, I'm working on recommender systems, and then you compare millions of users and you compare their interactions with a website. So you have this centralized data set and you have to calculate on it. So how do you do it? Yeah, we have millions of connections, and don't you have a latency problem?
Yeah. So the short, basically the, to paraphrase, how do you make this scale at web scale, right? So good question. So first off, keep in mind, this is all built on the web, right? So all of this stuff that was, all these technologies that were created to allow the web to scale still apply completely here. John mentioned Akamai as kind of edge caching and CDN. It just, you know, that applies here. There are certain things in computer science that you can't get around if you want to find a lot of things quickly, right? So you need to make indexes and stuff. And I will say that first off, the graph data model allows you to find stuff, a lot of things, in, you know, relative performance is pretty decent without having to use an index. But at a certain point, like, you get beyond it. The scenario you're describing is just that one. The indexing still works. You can still do indexing, but but with this one subtle difference. I get to decide, as a pod or entity owner, what you can index. And then I get to decide when you stop indexing. So you don't have to reinvent the way to organize and find stuff. You can still use that to solve scale problems. You have the added benefit of a graph-based data model that allows you to solve for some lightweight stuff, but also it allows you to make better indexes, because the way that, say, like Google indexes stuff on the web, it's kind of fuzzy statistics because it has to just go through documents. But in a graph, when you actually have context around how things are related, it allows you to construct more efficient indexes and aggregates as well.
Do you expect that you'd get paid to give access to companies?
That you would get paid to give access? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the prior question about marketing data. That's the idea. There's this new economy where, you know, your data is valuable, not just, it's only your data is valuable to you, but our data are valuable to a lot of others. But you get the ability to surface what you want to certain services, but in exchange for something. So it's equitable.
Thank you. Great data is from a light solution. We also focus on HR platforms and also run an innovation lab out of Chicago, Illinois. My, this is a great segue from the gentleman that just left about, hey, has there been any discovery research done in terms of third generation blockchain currency technologies, most importantly ones that solve the sustainability, interoperability, and scalability that Bitcoin and Ethereum has currently right now? Have there been any discussions about that, about how to plug those into solid?
Yeah, actually, we've got a guy who's part of one of the core team members on the open core side, who's working on something called SolidPay that, in essence, you know, is aimed at exactly what you just described. It's not with Solid. You can interoperate with distributed ledgers. You can even make a ledger on Solid. It's just, the thing is, it's not kind of essential to the design, but you can incorporate one where, you know, a ledger or blockchain makes a lot of sense. You can integrate one for things like payments and distributed payments, and it works quite well. So yeah, there is a project that's pretty far along already that he's integrated with Lightning and a couple other things already.
I would also say look into Cardano, which is another third generation solution for cryptocurrencies.
Which one was that?
Cardano.
C-A-R-D-A-N-O. Okay. Yeah, we'll check it out. Thanks.
Hi, my name is David. The answer to the first part of my question, the answer to the second part. Where are applications executing, and how does that solve the security issue that you started out with, that it's not enough? How do you prevent bad apps?
Great question. Yeah, so a couple things. There's with security, there's never one silver bullet, right? So you have to solve it in a few different ways. So there's different kinds of apps the same way that you have today. So a lot of the web-based ones that people are making are using, going to be written in things like Angular and React and Vue, and so they're going to be client-side, they're executed as web apps. You know, the toolkit that we've been releasing, you know, we've been updating every couple of weeks is React-based. So those are going to execute client-side on browser. You're also going to have native applications on phones, on desktops. You're going to have agents that kind of run, you know, autonomously and connect in to do some work in your pod and do some things. The authentication scheme that's used in Solid is we've got a few that we support, but OpenID Connect, which is built on top of OAuth, we use kind of a flavor of that that makes it decentralized. Basically, where your pod can act as your identity provider, and you're able, using kind of your traditional OAuth-based model, to delegate authority to access certain resources in your pod, and that access may be read, it could be write, it could be append, it could be, you know, full control. But you're able to basically create some credentials that an application can use to access that narrow scope. You know, to this gentleman's question earlier, you can say that, you know, this specific application, I've given authority to access just this collection. And I can rescind that as well at any point in time. So that applies really to any kind of application. When you're in the browser, we also have some additional origin checking to just help with cross-site scripting and things like that. But you know, we didn't. The one thing is that we didn't want to do. We didn't want to reinvent an authentication model. We wanted to stick with one that, you know, it's fairly tried and true. Again, nothing's a silver bullet, but that helps. The last part of it, because you can authorize a bad app, right? So in that case, and this is more of an ecosystem thing, John talked about the ecosystem, is the idea of basically trusted app registries. Not one, not like the Apple App Store, because that centralization kind of gets you away. The idea that you can say, you know what, I trust Inrupt, who maintains a registry, and I know that they've got some validated apps, and that I know if I get apps that are kind of listed in their registry, that they've done these certain things to check them out and make sure that they're good on my behalf. But the Solid community, you know, will probably have, you know, soon this year is going to have a registry, and your company, you know, your enterprise that you work at, can have a registry for your internal stuff. So you kind of solve it with technology and with ecosystems, because that's the way that you got to do it with security.
Yeah, we like to refer to them as beneficent apps. So it's a work to do to create a registry of apps that we can describe as beneficent, which is to say, to the best of our capability, we determine that doing the right thing by, you know, the users, and there is safe and security one might reasonably expect them to be, and so on. So,
and actually, the last, maybe just the last part of that, I clearly get really psyched up about this question, so I apologize. John talked about the network effect. The network effect here also applies to bad applications, because since your data and applications aren't siloed together, like in today's world, if you didn't like what, say, happened with Facebook, part of the reason why I think a lot of people didn't just say, I'm going to stop using it, is because, well, the data is connected to the application. You can't just decide to go use another one and just have your data be there. So you're kind of attached to the silo. But in this world, you can say, like, let's say that there's an application that, you know, is discovered that it's misusing information, or if it's bad, you can switch to a different one in 5 minutes, and you can bet, if it's popular, that there's going to be a bunch of others rushing to make the one that replaces it. And because your data comes with you, you can just switch to those other ones. So there's no real leverage that people have to say, we're going to be able to get away with this because we've got all the information. You know, kind of a network effect can take a popular app and make it a zero in no time at all, and people have other alternatives.
Let's get out of the phone.
Yeah, hello. Quite interesting. I discovered that the Estonian government works on the same model internally. So all of the agencies are basically their own boards. They're using a common communication standard, so everyone is exchanging information, and the applications use the information directly from these different agencies. So really interesting to see you solving the same problems we are having with the same model. The biggest difference is we don't give like open access for people to use this information. People can see all the information the government has about them and how the data is being used and where. But it's, right now it's like a laws based. If you have a legal reason to access those databases, then you can. So to some extent, banks or we use banks and large service providers, and we force a lot of companies to give information to the government through the same model. And actually, legally, we are thinking about giving people the possibility to authorize other companies to use the data, but our lawyers are worried basically about protecting people from themselves. Like, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
So how far are you with that, with these ideas?
Yeah, so is the question how do you protect people from themselves?
Exactly.
I'm still trying to figure that out for myself. I think you do it with, first, the ecosystem, those network effect things that I just talked about. You know, the ecosystem is going to help protect each other because, by nature of the way it was designed, people, when you have your data, it's not just about having kind of control of your data, but because you have control, you're also able to continuously see what's using and what's accessing it, and say, you know what, I don't think I should continue to, I'm not using that anymore, I'm going to cut access off. So visibility to what you've got is something that no one has today, but that you get for free here.
I do that code.
Sorry?
I do that code.
Please,
my God.
But yeah.
Okay, very interesting problems you have.
Yeah, in essence, I mean, I think the government, I know the government makes heavy use of, graph-based technology because you've got a lot of different stuff and it's highly connected, so that's just the technology that you use. What we introduced was Solid above and beyond just, a graph where one entity wants to see everything, is that people get to carve out their segments of the graph and decide and control who can kind of, traverse that.
Right? Our model is if the agency that stores the data gives permission to other agencies, not to all of the data, but specific sections, so you have to request access that they need this portion of data to do that, and if it's deemed like legal, then you can access that bit of information.
Yeah. When's the Mueller report come out?
Soon.
Cool. Okay, but thank you.
So now, while the data is in all the silos, the apps and websites are only like accessing that when you're actually using them. In this model, is it always accessible all of the time? Like when you give someone access to your data, because it kind of seems like I can protect my data a little bit more that way than just giving someone access to all of it all the time or whatever.
So you can provide access to narrow slices of it. You also can do like basically like some conditional authorization. So I think for a lot of people that's like time based. Like I want this to expire after a certain amount of time. You can create, and I think what we try to make the standard as lightweight and as non-prescriptive as possible. What we want for something like that is for people to create agents that it kind of are like someone's privacy watchdog. That can, look at activity and curate authorization for people, give you a notification that says, hey, you've given access to this. It hasn't been used in, you know, 2 months. Maybe I'm going to turn it off, and I'll let you know if, you know, that it wants to use that again. So the standard is very flexible. The authorization portion of that, super flexible. But the real smarts on things like that, we want to see applications be able to do the intuitive stuff because they can with the information that's in the pod. So we kind of want to solve a little bit, if that answers your question. Cool.
I think we're done.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.